financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I'm doing great. What are we going to be talking about today?
You know, we just had Father's Day, and I have a little pet peeve about Father's Day.
Okay.
I think fathers are incredibly important, and yet Mother's Day, there's this huge fuss about, you know, if you, for instance, if you forgot to send your mother flowers or take her out to dinner or call her on Mother's Day, there would be a new world order, right, for most people.
Right.
Father's Day comes and it's like, hey, dad, have a burger.
Yeah. I will say, though, that if you ask probably 9 out of 10 dads, they could care less.
Yeah, I guess so.
I still think it's nice to acknowledge. Yeah. But I think that they don't get, you know, moms, we want our due presents.
Yeah. I would say even moms will be like, yeah, okay, you know, they appreciate me, but I'm a mom and that's what I do. So anyway, I wanted to talk about fathers, and I'm using this in this term in a very loose way. So it could be single dads. It could be two parent household dads. It could be stepdads. It could be mentors. Anybody that has acted in a fatherly way toward you in your life.
Yeah.
I would say, oh, I just got the chills saying that because my mind just went through several men who have taught me so much, not necessarily in a father role, but who kind of look out for people. They have that paternal instinct, right? We talk a lot about the maternal instinct. So they have that paternal instinct. And I have this small story to share with you. And then we can talk about what some other people have said their dads have taught them. And I would love to hear your slant on this, of course. But just yesterday and today, I've had this sort of ongoing experience with a person on Marketplace. And it's because this is a weird story, but I listed these two lithium batteries for sale that I thought were dead. Right? Okay. I thought they had died. And I couldn't use them. So I didn't list them for sale. I said, if somebody could charge one of these up, if you can show me how to charge mine, you can have the other one for free.
Oh, that's a good deal.
They're an expensive battery. They were like $1,200 when they were in medical equipment, and now they're selling at about $100 a piece. So I thought, well, that'd be nice. If you just help me, you can have one for free.
Right.
And I got so many messages from people offering to help in some way, not saying, hey, I'll take your battery, not trying to swindle me, but genuinely trying to help. And this one man wrote, and he wrote back and forth, and he was a mechanic. And he taught me, and even sent me a YouTube video, that you just have to wake these things up a certain way. It was very simple. It didn't cost me a thing. And they are both charging properly now.
I've got to say that I'm shocked.
Both those batteries.
I'm shocked by this. I'm on Marketplace a lot, and that is not usually my experience.
You know, it's really funny. It seems that if you offer things in a very human way, like I said, they're free. And then I said in the description, if you can charge one, you can have it for free if you can show me how to charge mine. And it's a very sort of human approach. And people were like, wait, no, don't give those away. You can fix those. Just do this. And there were three different men who wrote to me and said, try this, try that. And none of them wanted the batteries. They were all just trying to help. And I just thought that was the nicest thing. So I asked this man if I could use his name, and he was a little shy about it. So I won't use his name. I'll give you his first initial was F.
Okay.
And
now I'm going through
and that's
Fred,
all I'll give you.
Frank. Trying to think of other F names.
Oh, you can go through a bunch of F names, but
Francis.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
Francis, right, is one of them, yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was the kindest thing to do for a complete stranger. I mean, he messaged me a bunch of times and I kept going back to him saying, I'm really sorry to bother you. But it reminded me of my own dad and how kind he was to people when he, complete strangers, you know, he didn't know them at all, but they needed help and he would do everything he could to try to help them, sometimes to a fault or, you know, at his own peril. But really, there's something about a real dad, you know, not necessarily your biological dad, but somebody who is a dad to you. And again, it could be a mentor. It could be anybody. It might even be, you know, a woman or somebody of another gender, but who fathers you in some way. So what I wanted to talk about is the kinds of things that we learn from them financially, right, about money. For instance, this battery story sounds crazy, but it just saved me a boatload of money replacing those batteries.
Yeah.
Because of something he taught me. And it was mostly encouraging me. Like I'm texting him saying, I'm afraid to blow this battery up. They told me it would blow up. And he's saying, just do it this way. This is going to be okay. And I went out with, you know, inspired by courage from him and did it. And they're charging right now perfectly. So I don't know. Tell me, do you mind sharing any story about your dad?
We'll say that I feel like I missed out on a lot of that. My dad died early, not to be a downer. He was only 52. So a lot of those conversations I think we would be probably having now or, you know, in the past 10 or 20 years. Yes. But I do remember him. One thing that just sticks in my head from being younger is when I'd moved out of the house, he would always find my car because I'd have like loose change or money laying around in there. So he'd always like get on me to keep track of my money, to keep track of where it was, because he would always see it. No matter where I was, it'd be something there. So that it just reminded me of that. And I just remember being younger and him always making sure that I had a couple dollars on me at all times for emergencies. So if I was going out, he'd slip me in a 5 or a 10 to be able to be okay.
Oh, that's sweet. That's really sweet. When I was researching what kinds of things people learn from their dads, I came across this article at debt.com. It was really interesting. They interviewed, I think, 16 financial professionals and said, what lessons about money did you learn from your dad? And Jordan Grumet from Earn and Invest said that his dad died very young also when he was 7 years old, which is the same age that my father's dad died. So that kind of got me. Mm-hmm. And the thing that his dad did that changed his life, even at that early age, is he left a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
And that meant that his family could survive. And that, when I read things like that, I think, you know, when we buy life insurance, we never really think we're going to die, right?
Yeah.
Nobody really checks their own mortality and says, yep, I'm going to die. I better buy this life insurance. But we all will. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you know, he had a 7-year-old son and who knows if he had other children, but he was able to provide them with something that they could get by on. And then he goes on to say that a few years later, his mother remarried and his stepdad taught him all kinds of things, including really strong and good financial habits, which he uses to this day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to be too categorical about this, but moms worry about things, you know, emotional sides of things and are you okay? And all the things that they want to raise a healthy, happy individual. And I think dads care about that. Mm-hmm. How would I know? I'm not a dad. I'm just supposing, right? They may care about that, but they see things differently than moms do. Mm-hmm. And I think often they're quieter about it. They lead by example more than telling you what to do. You know, again, my dad was a, you know, I've said this many times on the air. My family had no money. We were not, we were not poor. I mean, we were not wealthy. We didn't know we were poor. I would say we were in the lower middle class at best. And my dad had a series of sales jobs. He was always in some sort of sales, but he would change jobs often, very often. And sometimes we learn from our parents what you want to be, and sometimes we learn what you don't want to be.
Right.
And I think that my propensity to stay in the same industry for now 37 years came from, I don't want to keep changing jobs. Mm-hmm. However, there was something about the fact that he could do anything. You know, yes, he was in sales, but he would also wheel and deal stuff or do mechanical things or trade things with people to keep his family fed. And so I kind of learned about multiple streams of income from him, even though sometimes they were simultaneous and sometimes they weren't. You know, you learn to reinvent yourself from a parent like that, who is constantly saying, I have to start over again. What will I do now?
Right.
And who didn't want to be out of work. He was very prideful. So I think this will ring true for a lot of people's dads. Michael Taylor from Shifting Shares said that his dad was a tinkerer, and that he spent a lot of time failing at creating the perfect product, which meant that he learned, okay, there's no free lunch, he said, and he learned that if you fail, that's okay. You know, it takes how many no's to get a yes, or how many tries do you do before you succeed? Keep swinging the bat, you know, those kinds of things. So, you know, these are financial professionals like myself who say, you know what? I didn't wake up today knowing what to do with money.
Right.
Somebody taught that to me in some way. And it probably came early and it probably came by example. You know, as a mom, that if you tell your kids something, you know, I want you to do it this way because it's the best way to do it, but you yourself do it a different way.
Right.
Which one are they going to follow?
Yeah, for sure. And they're watching really closely, even when you think that they're not.
Yeah. And they are like little sponges, right?
Yeah.
There was a couple of women in this interview as well. One was Melanie Hansen from EDI Refinance. And she basically said, look, you know, without my dad, even though my mom encouraged me to go to college, it was my dad that encouraged me to pay attention to my debt.
Yeah.
So she said, yeah, she went to college, but she would have graduated in much worse financial shape mm-hmm. if it weren't for her dad saying, you got to stay on top of this stuff. You know, you got to get earn extra money or do what you can to pay those loans down. I thought that was an interesting one. Yeah, you know, you mentioned that your dad died young, and it's so sad and when that happens, because whenever your parents leave, if you had a good relationship with them, they leave a big hole, even if you didn't have a good relationship with them, you know, and to miss that is difficult for some people. But, you know, there's so many different ways you can learn from your parents, and what they teach you and what they choose to teach you is so important. Just as an example, my dad was 49 when I was born. Mm-hmm. So that's the age of most of my peers' grandparents.
Right.
So when I was going to school, even though they were my parents and they were very youthful, they were born in times that my other student friends didn't understand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my dad, I mean, people out there are going to start doing the math. How old is this woman anyway? She's like Methuselah. She talks about 37 years, and how old could she possibly be? So my dad was born in 1916.
Oh.
It still boggles my mind when I think that. 1916. Imagine what the world was like in 1916.
Well, yeah, and then he lived through the Great Depression, too.
Yes, but he wasn't, yeah, exactly. But he wasn't born in 1940s, mm-hmm. like most people my age's parents were, 1945, for instance. I am the last year of a baby boomer, mm-hmm. you know. So the last possible year for baby boomers. So if you really care out there, 1963 was when I was born. You can do the math yourself. But it meant that he had a different set of values. You brought this up exactly the right way. Lived through the Depression as a young person, mm-hmm. right? His father, of course, fell off a roof when my dad was 7 and died right at my dad's feet. Now that will, as you know, make a mark, you know, and so at 7 years old, like this other gentleman, Jordan, my dad was the man of the family.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure.
An immigrant mom who spoke broken English mm-hmm. and 3 sisters.
Wow.
So they pulled him out of school to get a job and support the family.
At seven. Wow.
And he did. So that will tell you that you talk about a work ethic. That's trial under fire right there. Mm-hmm. He got a job on an ice wagon. We don't even have, I mean, of course we don't have ice wagons, but imagine an ice wagon where they would go and deliver the ice, right? Suddenly I feel like a little like Bill Cosby. We went up, you know, we walked to school uphill both ways, right? but this is a true story. So, you know, he became a modern man. He always was trying to learn. He always was trying to get cutting edge information. He mm-hmm. was very curious. Probably one of the biggest traits that I think I got from my dad was that curiosity mm-hmm. and wanting to fix something, wanting to find a problem and fix it, which is why I do what I do for a living, right? I don't care what the problem is. I will try and listen to you find solutions. I it's inherent in me. But I think it's because both my parents had to do that. So, you know, as my dad was the age of my grandparents, you know, of other grandparents, I mean, you know, he saw things differently and I had a different set of skills from him. So, you know, that's true also of a very young parent. You learn things differently. They're maybe more playful and they're more of a friend than a real parent. And mm-hmm. so fathers are really important. We should talk in the second half about the kinds of things other financial advisors were taught by their parents. And I would love to know if anybody wants to write in comments. We always ask for questions, but if they want to write in comments or stories about their dads, I'd love to do a follow-up show on this sometime. Mm-hmm. I just think what we learn from our parents is so important.
Can I get your phone number for everyone out there?
No.
You have to give it out.
Okay, I will. 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with the second half of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a HUG coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. HUG Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit HugYourMoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. We were talking about our fathers and their advice with money. And also, we were talking off air, and you were saying that you think there's a different relationship between dads and daughters and mothers and sons.
I think that's true. I certainly, my brother, you know, felt a different kind of relationship with my father, I think, than I did.
Right.
And, or than my other sisters did. And each sibling, of course, has a different relationship with their father. But, you know, I really wanted to do this on the tail end of Father's Day because it comes and goes in a flash and then, you know, dad's off doing whatever. But all the things that dads do that they don't make any fanfare about, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to say, hey, I fixed your car 17 times and what are you going to do for me lately? They just go, okay, you know, her car's broken down. I'll just go and fix it.
Yeah, right? They take care of it.
Yeah. And if they're not mechanically inclined, they seem to find somebody else to do it. I mean, even getting like a AAA membership for you mm-hmm. is a lovely thing that maybe a dad might do and maybe a mom might not.
Right.
I mean, I'm a very modern woman. There are lots of, I buy my own AAA membership, right? Lots of people of all genders would do this. But because dads are more common to, I think it's more common for dads to do those kinds of things. I think it's important to talk about. I remember as a little girl, so I'm a very bad carpenter. Mm-hmm. I can do lots of other hands-on projects, but for whatever reason, I am not good with wood and I know it.
Okay.
Now, it might be because what I learned from my dad about carpentry was that my job was to sit on the board. You sit on the board while I cut the board, or you stack the cordwood, right? So, you know, some people would take somebody and say, okay, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is how you set up a miter joint, or this is how you router something out. And you might learn a lot from that. But my dad was not a particularly great carpenter, but when he was doing something and I was very curious and interested, my job was always to sit down, shut up.
So, make sure you're pointing the flashlight in the right direction.
Yes. And I don't do sit down and shut up so well these days. So I didn't learn that lesson very well. But anyway, you know, we were talking about the gentleman who had an immigrant parent. You see that I was talking about my dad having an immigrant mom, and you see these differences from people, cultural differences, when mm-hmm. people come from other countries and they bring to the table a set of values that are not American. Now, you might think that's good. You might think it's bad. I don't care which you think it is. It's different.
Yeah, I think the image in my head is that from other countries, the man is more the leader of the family, where here it's really 50-50.
I think that's true in a lot of countries. I mean, I'm sure it's changing, but I just think that the economic impact mm-hmm. in, say, a third world country is so much different. I recall years ago when we were doing the Money Doctor show on GCTV, I had one of my favorite interviews was the couple that owns Alina's restaurant in Hadley, Mass.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, the restaurant's great, but his story is even better. And so he comes from, I think, the DR. I hope I'm right about that. But anyway, he tells us it was a combination interview of him in the studio with his wife mm-hmm. and also at the restaurant live. And in the studio, she was so supportive of him while he told his story. And his story was, I bought my first pair of shoes on time payments. And you could see him cry in the video. And I just thought, wow. Now, you know, here we're complaining that the kids can't get a cell phone until they're 12 because the parents can't afford it or something. His first pair of shoes on time payments. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have them until I think he was 7 years old before he had a pair of shoes.
Wow.
Something like that. So those kinds of stories, you know, will come with people and they do things differently. So Mark Chen, who from Bill Smart, said that he had an immigrant father and he taught him to be curious and he taught him to do his homework. Mm-hmm. And he said, if you do your homework on things, on stocks and other things, if you do your homework, you can make good gains and shave years off of your retirement. Mm-hmm. So that's what he learned from his dad. Darren Colanani, I hope I've done that right. Darren Colanani from Centurion Wealth Management said his dad taught him to pay everything with his credit card. I know you're shivering right now, to build credit and to make sure to pay it off every month. But more importantly, the importance of savings. Mm-hmm. So he taught him to open a savings account, and every time he got money for a birthday or holiday, to put the money in the savings account. And so that was a great lesson for him. Anthony Martin from Choice Mutual said he was taught at a very young age when he was making an entry-level salary, and it seemed completely futile to save anything because he had all this student debt.
Right.
So he had an entry-level salary, a lot of student debt, and no money. And his father taught him, you may feel futile, but put $50 a month away. Mm-hmm. And that has now turned into thousands of dollars. But more importantly, the habit that he learned was to increase his investments.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is, you know, these are people who do what we do for a living, right?
I was thinking, I thought of another one that my dad said, and we kind of touched on this before, but was always to be financially independent, to not depend on a man. And that's always stuck with me. Like I've always, even when I was married, I kept my money separate and paid my own bills, but that stuck with me for sure.
What an interesting slant. Now, if you take that same comment, my parents said the same thing. You don't want to have to depend on anybody. They didn't necessarily say a man, but you don't want to depend on anybody financially. Take that same comment that your father made. Make sure you're financially independent so you don't have to depend on a man.
Mm-hmm.
And think about what he might have been thinking. And then flip it to a mom telling you the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself financially independent so you don't have to depend on a man. They probably had different ideas of what that meant, different perspectives, right? The father might have felt, I'm just supposing, maybe he felt like, you know, life would be easier for me as a man if I didn't have to support, you know, all these women who aren't financially independent, right? Not your dad necessarily, but in general, a man might be looking at it from that perspective, like, hey, I just want to live my life and worry about me too, but I have to support these other people who are not financially independent. Whereas a mom or a woman might be thinking, you know, you don't want to be beholden to somebody because you don't want to be in a bad relationship because you can't leave because of money.
Yeah.
Right?
On my dad's side, I definitely think that it's more like, and this might be with dads and daughters, the way that I took it was like, once he's not around to protect me anymore, he wants to make sure I could take care of myself because he's not there as the backup for the other guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you're probably right, nail on the head. You hit the nail on the head, yes. I think you're probably right about that. And I'm sure that that's one of the things that I think leads to the kinds of lessons we're talking about is the protectiveness of a dad or a father figure in some way. To just watch out for the people in their lives, whether they're daughters or sons or, you know, friends or relatives. I mean, how many times has a neighbor, you know, maybe not in the big cities, but if you're in a small town, some neighbor has probably come to your aid at some point or you have gone to theirs.
Yeah.
And they're just a neighbor. They're just the person that lives next door. You didn't choose to put them there. You don't have a working relationship with them necessarily. But, you know, if you need help, somebody will come and ask you for help or you can offer help. And that can be, you know, a lovely thing to do, but it can also be very fatherly in some ways, right? Like this guy, you know, writing to me about the batteries. What a funny thing to do. There was one that I thought was a particular standout. Sean Plummer from The Annuity Expert said that his father taught him this lesson about money. $1,000 is a lot of money to spend, but it's not a lot of money to have.
That's true.
It's kind of deep.
Yeah.
But it's kind of true, right? That's, to me, that was one of the standout comments. There were many others, if anybody wants to read the article, of course, but that was a standout comment to me because, you know, people tend to blow money like they blow $5 on a coffee. I always pick on coffees. I don't know why, because it's an easy one, easy target. Blow $5 on a designer coffee, but they'll complain about the fact that it cost them $10 to wash their car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's two coffees.
Yeah,
you can make
true.
Two coffees at home, wash your car, right? I mean, there's always things like this that you can take a look at. But $1,000 is a lot of money to spend. You know, if you're thinking about, I'm going to buy a new refrigerator and it's $1,000, you're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are thinking about that. Like, gee, I don't really want to spend that money. But if you only have $1,000 in emergency cash reserves, you're thinking, I don't have enough. I need to save money. So the advice there, the lesson there really is to think about every time you're looking at a big purchase like that, can you buy it for less? Can you solve the problem for less? And can you save some money and build up those cash reserves? All right. So there were two more that I thought were fairly common, but really valuable lessons. So Matt Carter, who is a business law attorney from Inc. and Go, said that his father taught him as a very young attorney when he wasn't making a lot of money and all of that to start putting money away in his 401k. And that made a difference, of course, in his life. And it would be easy when you're not making much money to say, well, when I make more money, especially as something like an attorney where you know probably every year your income's going up, you mm-hmm. know, to say, well, I'll start my 401k later. But he had him started as a young attorney. And I thought that was really, you know, getting going early was really important.
So interesting, too, though. I'm wondering how many families or how many dads have like a money talk? Like you always hear about the sex talk for kids. But is there a money talk, or is it like little bits of advice as you go along, or as you were saying, you kind of see what they're doing themselves? But it, I wonder if it is important to sit down and have a money talk.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, it would be, of course, the advisor in me says, yes, let's have a money talk, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure what children get out of that. They may take a part or two away, a piece or two away from it, and it might have some gravity that somebody sat down and said, okay, we're going to have some lessons along the way, but you just need to understand one of the important things that I want you to learn in life is about money. And if you have any questions about money, you know, you don't have to think I'm good at it, mm-hmm. but come to me and ask, and we'll find an answer together. We'll get somebody who knows if I don't know. But, you know, of all the things you do, money is going to be in the way a lot if you're right. not good at it. I recently met a young man at a big box store locally. And he works there in the summers, and he's studying economics at Holy Cross. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, it's such a great choice. He said, I don't know what else I would charge, what else I would take at a liberal arts college. And he said, so I took economics at Holy Cross. And I said, you know, it's a great choice because even if you don't go into that field directly, you've learned a lot about how the world works when it comes to money, you know, maybe on a macro level. Rather than a micro level, but it's still useful information. Mm-hmm. I would say Dave Anderson, who is the founder of BMO GAM Viewpoints, which is a thing I don't know, actually, I have to say. Do you know that?
Mm-mm. I know it's a mouthful.
No. Yeah, well, I'm not even sure I'm saying it right. But anyway, Dave Anderson, who's that founder, said that his father taught him to be like a squirrel. Be like a squirrel, put money away. Every mm-hmm. time you have a little bit, put it away somewhere. So there was a lot of lessons in this article about saving, not so much about spending. Nobody I read said, yeah, my father told me not to buy anything, mm-hmm. you know, but they, which is interesting because how do you save if you're spending like crazy, right?
Right.
So there might be a piece of the puzzle missing there a bit, but I just found it so heartwarming. And I want to thank all the people out there who father somebody in some way, because it does make a difference. Mm-hmm. When you're feeling like it's not making a difference, it's probably one of those times that they're really learning from you.
Yeah, you think no one's listening, but they actually are. All right, well, let's get your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime. Thank you so much. We'll do this again next week.
Thanks, Jess. Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
I'm Shannon. I'm from Greenfield.
I'm Kevin. I'm from Franklin County. When Shannon first mentioned it, I was like, no, no, no.
I said, honey, your profession is your profession, and you are amazing at it, and it involves being in control of a lot of things. I said, but sometimes you have to let control go to somebody who knows more in a different area. And I said, she is professional. She knows about finances. So let's let her help us. And then when we left your office that day, he was like, holy crap. I'm so glad you made me do that.
Debt, budget, retirement. HUG works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hey, Jess. How's it going?
It's going good. What are we talking about today?
Well, Lola, you know, my little Bengal kitty.
Mm-hmm.
Ola, who has become our sort of therapy cat here at the office and sometimes photobombs my videos. Let's just walk across in front of me. So last night she said to me, hey, Mom, you know what you should talk about on the air tomorrow?
You're now talking to your cat, just so we know for sure.
You should talk about it right meow. It's pet insurance. How come you have health insurance and I don't? What's up with that?
Mm-hmm. Very, very true.
Yeah, it is true. And it, you know, it's not as well regulated as I might like, I guess. And so we don't hear that much about pet insurance, but I think we should talk about it because for many people, it might be a way to sort of separate your worries about your pet's health from your pocketbook.
Yeah, you know? I don't have pets, but my sister does. And we talk about this a lot.
Yeah, yeah. What does she have for pets?
No, not at all. The most expensive ever. She's got 3 French bulldogs and an English bulldog. And the French bulldogs, I know they're so popular right now. She's had French bulldogs forever. But anytime you bring them to the vet and they have to go for everything, it's thousands of dollars. And she was only able to get pet insurance on 2 of them and not all 4 because of there's health insurance. There's all this stuff. So I'm so curious to hear what you have to say about it because it gets a little confusing.
Well, it's true. I mean, in the past, I've looked for pet insurance for my pets. As they got older and I was more worried about costs, even if they didn't have anything going on, mm-hmm. I would look for coverage. And I would always see these premiums that would, you know, send me running saying, well, by the time I pay these premiums, I could pay for the health care.
Right.
But it seems like it's coming more into an affordable range. However, you're absolutely right. The things that will spike your premiums on this, because it's just like health insurance for people. Mm-hmm. You have a monthly premium or an annual premium. You get to decide which. Some companies will give you a discount for an annual premium. You have a deductible, right? So before they pay $1, you're going to have to pay out of pocket to a certain level. And you have a limit on it. So how much will it cover? Up to X number of dollars. It will cover your pet, you know, until you reach this limit, this $5,000, $10,000, $2,000, whatever your limit is on that policy. Mm-hmm. But some of the things that will adjust your premium are things like what kind of pet you own. Mm-hmm. Is it a cat or a dog? A lot of these pet insurance companies will not cover anything other than a cat or a dog.
Oh, really?
So for all the people with guinea pigs and snakes and exotic pets, you know, you have to look for a specific policy that might cover that animal. And then, like your sister, who has French bulldogs or English bulldogs or a breed that might be prone to a problem. For instance, my Bengal is prone to a tooth problem. Mm-hmm. So she gets, you know, probiotic and teeth brushing and all that sort of stuff. But still, she lets me brush her little teeth with these little tooth cloths that, you know, you just wipe their little teeth. Mm-hmm. And God bless her, she lets me do it. But even with that, she's had to have some teeth pulled. Mm-hmm. So the companies are not foolish. They know, okay, you got a French bulldog, you might have X number of problems. Therefore, your premium's going to be higher.
Right.
Because that's what they're doing is analyzing risk, right? But it shouldn't deter you from looking for policies. And in the case of pre-existing conditions, like your sister, you know, might have with her pets, they won't cover pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
So you are just SOL on those, I'm sorry to say, unlike healthcare, which now can't, you know, since the Obama time cannot, you know, prevent you from getting insurance because you have pre-existing health issues, they have to cover you. Not the same with pet insurance.
And I will say for people who are listening right now who don't have a pet and thinking this is crazy, why would anybody do this? Like the first time you go into the vet's office, it's like $800 just for shots. Like you would not believe how much the cost of pet care has gone up. So I know some people are listening and thinking like, okay, what are you going to do next for the pet? But it will save you probably, right? I'm sure you're going to tell us whether it's a good buy or a bad buy.
Well, it's subjective. Mm-hmm. You know, a person who buys pet insurance and then never needs it thinks it's a bad buy.
That's true.
Right? That's true. Somebody who, this is why you buy insurance. You're mm-hmm. hedging your bet. You're hedging your risk. Somebody who, you know, didn't buy it and has lots of expenses will think it was a good buy and they should have done it. Mm-hmm. But it's true. One of the things pet insurance usually won't cover, I've never seen one that would cover it, but if somebody has one, they can let me know, is your first time visit to the vet. So you get a new puppy or a new cat and you have to go and get all its shots and have it spayed or whatever. It may not cover that. So there are different kinds of policies. But in terms of cost, the ASPCA says the annual cost of owning a cat is $1,149 a year.
Okay.
And the annual cost of owning a dog is $1,391 a year.
Wait a minute. The dog is only a couple hundred dollars more?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Well, you know, if you think about it, cat food is very expensive in small quantities versus dog food, things like that. But what that doesn't include is your first costs when you go to the vet, like we were just talking about, or things like grooming or dental work. So those costs that I just gave you of over $1,000 a year to own a pet
don't include any of that.
No, we're talking about regular maintenance, you know, buying food and kitty litter and, you know, dog leashes or whatever you need to take care of that pet that would not be covered by insurance. So that's a wake-up call to anybody thinking about having a pet who says, but I just want a pet, but they can't pay their electric bill.
Right.
You need to think about that. It's not that I don't want you to have a pet, but you need to think about how to care for the pet, you know, properly. So many pets end up in facilities because somebody couldn't care for them properly. So that's kind of sad. So there are three kinds of policies, and we can go into some detail about these, of course, in the second half especially. But the three kinds of policies really are two policies and an add-on. So there's an accident policy, an accident and illness policy, and a routine wellness kind of policy.
Okay.
The routine wellness is a sort of an add-on. I haven't found a standalone routine wellness policy. Again, if it's out there, somebody can call and tell me. Maybe some vet knows about it or somebody who's experienced that. But in terms of the way that they work, we talked about the deductible and the limit and the fact that you have a monthly or annual premium. But unlike your regular health insurance, there are two things that are different.
Okay.
One is that they don't pay the vet. They pay you. So you have to pay up front and then file for reimbursement. Now, that's a little risky for some people because you're not quite sure whether those costs are going to be covered or not.
Right.
So it often means a phone call to the insurance company in advance of going to the vet saying, I know that what they're proposing is this kind of work, you know, blood work, whatever. Will this be covered? And even then the company may say, well, probably, or maybe you have to send the bills in and see. So, you know, sometimes people buy health insurance or pet insurance, excuse me, and they don't read the fine print and they think, okay, I got a great policy. It's I'm covered. And then the first time they go to the vet and it's not covered, they say, well, what am I paying for? And they get angry and they cancel the policy. So you really do need to understand that. So the reimbursement is one of the things that's very different from regular health insurance. The second thing is, and some health insurance is like this, but most is not any longer, there's no network. Now, this could be seen as a positive. In other words, you can go to any vet you want.
Right.
Because they aren't paying the vet. But depending on what those vets charge, you may or may not get reimbursed the full amount of this money. So, you know,
where with like a PPO, they would write off the difference.
Yeah. They can say, well, the average cost is this and your vet charged that and we're not paying that. We're paying this and you're paying the difference. So those are the kinds of things to think about in terms of the type of policy it is. Clearly, it's a better, you have a better shot of getting a good policy and being able to use it longer if you get it when your pet is younger and healthier. Your premiums will be lower, much like life insurance for people, right? Your premiums will be lower. There won't be probably pre-existing conditions that they'll exclude. And although you'll pay those premiums for a longer period of time, they're fairly inexpensive. The National American Pet Health Insurance Association, it's always a mouthful. They say the average cost of pet insurance for accident only is monthly for a cat, $10.85. Monthly for a dog, $19.93. Now, the average cost, again, these are averages only. The accident and illness policy that we talked about that covers both accidents and illness for a cat would be $28.57 a month and for a dog, $48.66 a month.
Okay.
So
you're talking, you know, $600 a month for a dog. So $600, do you think your vet bill would be more than $600 for that year?
A year, not a month. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And so, you know, you're talking about $130 roughly for a cat and about just under $600 average for a dog. is it a good deal? Well, you know what? American Pet Products Association, the APPA, says the average dog owner will spend $458 a year on surgical veterinary visits and $242 on routine vet care.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're talking, you know, $750. So yes, you would have some years where you have, always working with averages here, of course, some years maybe you would spend more than the insurance, some years you would spend less, but it does free you from one thing that we talk about a lot when we're talking about finance, and it's about having some limited risk, some knowledge of how much money is going out of your household on a monthly basis, at least within some certainty. For instance, if you pick up an accident and illness policy, which is what we're talking about in that $600 range for a dog and $100 cat, you know, you don't have to worry quite so much if your animal gets sick. Your dog is out in the yard, it eats something, it has a stomach problem, you take it to the vet, the bill is $850, you know, do you have to worry about it? Well, probably not so much with health and with pet insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You've limited your risk to a monthly amount with some exceptions, of course.
Well, yeah, but you have to figure into your deductible. So if you're paying $600 and then there's a $1,000 deductible before you even start to get paid, then you're thinking, okay, I'm risking it against $1,600.
That's true. But the deductible is not usually that much.
Okay.
And some of them will have a rollover. Like if you reach your deductible in the last couple of months of the year, mm-hmm. it counts toward the following year, et cetera. That routine wellness thing that I'm talking about, that's an added option. It's one that most people, if you're getting pet insurance, maybe you should consider, because it's the routine wellness that we all know really adds up. You know,
for sure.
It's something like 37% of the people in the United States say that they bring their pet to the vet once a year,
mm-hmm.
and the people bring them whenever they need it.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are important things to remember, I think. The kinds of factors that will raise your premium up are things like the type and amount of coverage that you get, of course, the deductible that you choose,
mm-hmm.
your location, because they're thinking about what do you spend in that area for vet bills, and your pet's age and breed.
Okay.
So that's how they factor it.
Well, we'll get more into this in the second half. We're going to get into the different kinds of policies. First, though, I want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
All right. You can go to hugyourmoney.com as well. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Every day, financial ads claiming to be different from the competition. Are they? I'm Francis Ram, the money doctor, and I'm about to make a bold statement. I believe the thing to focus on isn't their uniqueness, it's yours. No one has the same financial situation or needs as you, and no one can help us help you better than you. But the truth is, when it comes to managing money, most of us are not as successful as we'd like to be. No matter how focused we are, it's almost impossible to separate emotion, and being in a relationship can further compound the issue. That's why I developed Hug Your Money. Financial coaching, coupled with online software and tools to empower you to manage money wisely. We guide you every step of the way to resolve immediate issues and plan for your financial future with modeling scenarios. So whether it's debt, budget, retirement planning, or a financial crisis, having a HUG coach in your corner is like having a new best financial friend. HUG Your Money is as unique as you are. In fact, it's patented. Visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler along with the Money Doctor, and we're talking all about pet insurance.
Aww.
It looks like you've got a special guest joining you. I can see half an ear.
She's a little camera shy. Let's see if she'll come in. Sometimes she comes on her own. Well, we'll see. Okay, so pet insurance, we'll see. For people listening to us on the radio, they won't see it. But you can catch the show, of course, on, you know, anywhere you get your podcast now that we're videotaping it, YouTube, et cetera.
Oh, that's, I see the little full head.
You might come back over.
You've got a little Bengal cat right there is what people are missing out on.
Yes, and she's a sweetheart. She is. So let's talk a little bit more about pets in general. The United States is more pet happy than any place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
7% of our households have pets, as opposed to other places in the world. So that's kind of interesting. And as I said, about 37% of the people take their pet to the vet every year, and those costs rack up. You know, I looked up what percentage of people actually have pet insurance,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah,
we'll talk about it, but how many people buy it?
Right,
and the the stats are all over the place. Much like the premiums and the kinds of policies, the stats are all over the place. Forbes said that 4% of dog owners and 1% of cat owners have pet insurance.
Oh, that's low.
Really, really low.
Yeah.
And NerdWallet said that they surveyed 67% of what they call the population, I guess, and 24% of those said they had pet insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Millennials have a higher pet ownership than any other generation.
She's so pretty. Look at her.
At 32%. Yeah, she's getting braver here. Here she comes. At 32%. Generation Xers and Boomers mm-hmm. at 25%. Gen Zers only 14%. Say hello, Lola. And the Silent Generation, you know, people who were born before 1945, mm-hmm. only 3% of them own pets.
Oh, okay.
So what was interesting to me about that is that millennials are also sometimes the ones who are paying the higher mortgages, have these really high, you know, expenses, and they might not have their income up yet, although many do. And they own 32% of pets.
Mm-hmm.
3% of them own pets is what I should say.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, but that also is a reason that you might want to think about pet insurance. Mm-hmm. Right, Lola?
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about too, I don't know if you know, I'm sure you know the answer to this question, is most people have multiple pets. So then is it like an individual pet policy for each of them, or is it like your health insurance where you can add family members on?
You know, that's a really great question. And the answer is it's usually an individual one. But again, I will ask if anybody's heard of that. What a great idea if it hasn't happened already. I didn't find a group policy in my research. Oh, for anybody who's watching me thinking that I'm overfeeding my cat because I'm giving, we don't tell Lola this. Lola, block your ears. La, la, la. Okay. This is cat food.
Okay.
But she doesn't care that it's cat food because she gets them one piece at a time.
Aww.
Right? Yeah. And they're good for her teeth. So that's one thing. So, you know, some of the common emergencies that might happen when people are saying, well, my pet's healthy, I don't have emergencies. We're not talking about, you know, your dog got hit by a car, although under an accident policy, that mm-hmm. would get covered probably by the car insurance company as well. But we're talking about things like eyes, ears, you know, the dog mm-hmm. has an ear infection or the cat's got ear mites or something, although that's not usually an emergency. Cancer, of course. Skin problems is huge. So many pets get skin problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's ongoing expensive thing.
Right.
Stomach problems and some sort of growth. Those are the most common emergencies that might be covered under pet insurance. So what kinds of things does it cover? Well, an accident policy, much like you think, would cover just accidents. You know, your mm-hmm. dog hurt its leg while you were playing with it in the yard.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an accident. But it will cover not just the visit to the vet. Usually it will cover things like testing, procedures, medications related to that accident.
That's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Accident and illness covers all of that plus illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing you might want. If you're looking for comprehensive, really comprehensive insurance, you're looking for an accident and illness policy, and you're tacking on a routine wellness option.
Mm-hmm.
That will give you the highest coverage. Now, it will also be the most expensive.
Yeah, it's pretty pricey.
It will cover the most stuff. It's just like anything else. Is it pricey? I think for people who buy pet insurance, and that I think knowing your monthly premium and knowing that you're limiting your risk, you're not completely eliminating it, but you're limiting your risk
mm-hmm.
might help. Oh, you probably won't see Lola do this, but Lola, who is photobombing our video / radio show right now, has a trick that she does when she wants a treat. She puts her paw up to her mouth like a person and saying, feed me, feed me. I don't think you'll see it, but can you do it, Lola? Good girl.
Did you see? I did see it.
Yeah, she does that. What a good girl you are. So Lola is healthy, and we love that. But she goes to the vet, of course, for things. And I did have to have some of her teeth pulled, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Before she had a problem, you know, she went in for a checkup, and they told me, hey, she's got, you know, some problems with some back teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expensive, $700, $800, $1,200, you name it. The number of teeth they're pulling, you're feeling it.
Yeah.
If you don't have coverage. So some of the things that it won't cover, things health insurance, pet insurance won't cover, are things like, of course, pre-existing conditions we talked about,
mm-hmm.
food and vitamins. Sometimes you'll get a prescription diet and say, well, this is a fortune. Will my insurance cover it? No, it's food.
That's a bummer.
Not going to cover it.
Yeah.
Again, in general terms here, maybe some insurance company does, but I haven't found it. Breeding and pregnancy. Now, that can be a big deal for people. What mm-hmm. if there's a complication? And your dog is having puppies, right? Or your cat is having kittens. Behavioral treatments, boarding and kennel fees, taxes and administrative fees from your vet, it won't cover. So even though it might cover the bill, it's not going to cover your taxes or administrative fees. Mm-hmm. It won't cover grooming, lost or stolen pets, or cosmetic or elective procedures. So okay. Those are the things it won't cover.
What elective procedure are you getting on your dog? A little Botox?
Well, no. Yeah. Well, that's for the Shar Pei's. With all the wrinkles, yes, they need the wrinkles. Botox, right? Got to get that baby a little Botox, yeah. No. Yeah. So things like maybe docking your dog's tail or cropping their ears, right? That might be elective.
Okay.
Or maybe the dog's got a little deformity to a foot, but it can walk okay, but you would choose to have it changed, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It also won't cover things like experimental treatment, DNA testing. Don't ask me why you're doing the DNA testing on the dogs. Probably related to the breeding and pregnancy stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a lost parent somewhere. You know,
maybe you want the neighbor dog to be responsible for half the cost of the puppies, you know?
They're going to make a movie about it with the two dogs slurping the spaghetti, right? And non-veterinary expenses, it won't cover that. So we talked about the cost. If you missed the first half, somewhere between $10.85 a month and $48.66 a month on average, depending on whether you have a cat or a dog and what type of policy you're buying. The factors that will change those premiums are things like your dog's breed, et cetera. You know, I think really we've covered all the basics about it, including what people spend on dogs and cats. But just one reminder that you need to shop the market. Mm-hmm. So you want to start early. Here's my tips about buying pet insurance if you're considering it. Start early. Make sure that you know what's going to be excluded. So pre-existing conditions won't matter and things of that nature. You really need to shop the market and get the best deal you can get. Mm-hmm. You need to read all the different kinds of insurance. Do you want accident and illness? Do you just want accident? Do you want to tack on a routine wellness rider to that? And above all, I don't care how boring it is. I don't care if you have to have someone you trust do it. Read the fine print. Mm-hmm. Because you know what? I hate to end a show on this because it's the saddest of things, but it's also when you're at your saddest, if you have to deal with this and you're making this decision, it is the last thing you want to do about whether it's affordable or not. And that has to do with euthanasia. Mm-hmm. For people mm-hmm. put their pets to sleep, you know, many policies don't cover that, but some do.
Right.
And so when you find one that covers that, you might be on the road to a policy that's going to cover a lot of things. That's my litmus test. If it covers euthanasia, it might also cover other things. Mm-hmm. But just read the fine print or get some help with it. It's worth considering.
Do these policies, like health insurance sometimes, do they have a max? So say your pet comes down with like cancer or something, those bills can go on and on. Is there a max on there?
They do. They have a deductible. They have a limit. They have a premium, just like your regular mm-hmm. health insurance would have. But the two things that are different, just to recap that again, is there's no network, so you can go to any vet you want.
Right.
But they might limit your payment based on if they feel that your vet is overcharging or not, and they reimburse you for the expenses. You have to pay for it up front, and then they reimburse you. But it was something like 43% of people, according to MarketWatch, I think it was, said that they pay for their vet bills on a credit card or a personal loan.
Oh, for sure.
12.9%. Yeah, 12.9% use insurance. And most people say that they'll pay for it in cash. But my experience tells me when you get whacked with a $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $10,000 bill at the vet, paying for it in cash, you're looking for another way usually for people. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets pretty pricey. My friend, his daughter has a kitty and just needed $4,500 worth of surgery. So, I mean, it is important, like you said, to read the fine print too, because if you're paying a deductibles and then you're paying your premiums and then you have a max of like $5,000, is it really worth it? So I'm sure that some of the maxes are different, right?
Yeah, you really just have to do the math. The good news is that you can do the math. Mm-hmm. You can say, okay, this animal usually lives this many years. I'm going to pay this much in premium on average. And it's, you know, I'm probably going to save this much money. Is it worth it to me to get this or not? But the reason I'm talking about it really, besides the financial part, is that I'm such a pet lover. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad when you see people trying to make a decision about whether their pet can have the care it needs or not because it's affordable or not. And what I find most people do is they pay it anyway. They put it on a credit card.
Yeah, they go into debt for their pets. It's their babies. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so they will pay anything and they'll do it any way they need to. And then years later, they're telling me about, we don't know what to do. We have three dogs, two of them are elderly. We're barely able to pay the bills on one of these. Now, what are we going to do?
Right.
And, this is a good time to mention CARE credit card. I don't often talk about a credit card, but CARE credit card is probably available to you. And you can get 6 months with no interest or a year on higher bills with no interest, but it goes to a whopping fee afterwards. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to use that to pay your vet bills, make sure that you try and pay it off before the next vet bill or before the interest rolls in on it.
Mm-hmm. A quick final question for you. So I know you said you think it's a good idea, but it's a personal decision. Would you recommend if you have multiple pets getting it on each pet, or would you hedge your bets and be like, oh, I'll do it for two and not for the other two?
Wow, that's tough. I can't give you an intelligent answer about that. I'm sorry to say, I try not to say that, but it's so subjective. Mm-hmm. And it's not even that I'm saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying this is something that might take looking into. For some people, this is a great idea. For other mm-hmm. people, it doesn't matter. You know, they can tolerate the risk. They don't care. Or maybe they've had great experience with this particular breed of animal and mm-hmm. it's always been healthy and they're going to take their risk. But would I do it on all my pets? I guess it would depend on the affordability factor.
Yeah.
If I took it on all my pets, is it really still affordable for me? Because if it makes sense on one of your pets, it may make sense for you on the others as well, but not if the premiums are going to put you in the poorhouse. Then you really do have to start to figure out, am I going to roll the dice here?
Yeah. You know? And I think you could maybe think, like, I probably would think for myself that for the dog, it would be really smart. For the cat, it might be okay. I don't know. Then you talked about your cat's teeth. And then I'm thinking, okay, then there's another bill. So it might be smart.
I have paid way more for my cat's teeth than I paid for the cat, for sure.
Yeah. You know?
And often I just had, free animals or animals I would get from rescue leagues. So it's unusual for me to buy a cat, but she was worth every penny. But yeah, do you do it? I don't know. It's completely up to you. I try not to give you wishy-washy answers, but what I do try to give you is information.
Yeah.
You know, here's a way that you can look into something that might be worth it. And my caution is read the fine print and then decide on what you want to do.
I love it. All right. Well, let's get your phone number.
Of course. It's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can go to hugyourmoney.com for more information. I will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Jess.
All right, we'll have another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, coming up next week on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
We didn't know what to do or where to begin. We had our mortgage, obviously, and then we were just guessing at what we were going to have to borrow from Megan. I think we had a couple of car payments and maybe a couple of credit cards, maybe a home equity line as well that rounded it off before we got to the school loans. So it was substantial before we started. I was just glad there was a way to do this and send the kids to the schools they wanted to go to. Until you sit down and see how quickly you can get out of this stuff, it's overwhelming if you don't do it. Had we not done it, we would have been just saddled with this stuff for the rest of our lives. There's no doubt.
HUG works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.